My name is JJ Chalmers. I'm a broadcaster and former Royal Marine Commando. And it's the stories from the individuals within this military community that we are desperate to document. Our next guest is the co-founder of Combat Pest Control and the host of the Declassified podcast. His vision-led business is providing employment to veterans, educating children in conflict, protecting local communities, and supporting injured service personnel. A fascinating insight into how business can be a force for good and how trauma can have a positive impact. A Combat Pest Control special, Michael Coates. This is Declassified. Well, listen, mate, let's just start at the beginning. How did Michael Coates become the owner of a pest control company?
So, end of 2015, I received a telephone call. So one of our friends had been suffering from PTSD. So he'd been suffering from a couple of years with, you know, bad kind of debilitating PTSD. And I'm talking, you know, waking up screams, saturating the mattress, waking up in a cupboard kind of stuff, you know. And it was from his time in Sierra Leone, although he'd done Afghan, he'd done Iraq, but it was from his time in early 2000s in Sierra Leone. And then I suppose we started hearing whispers of some of our friends and friends of friends and peers and kind of seniors and all the rest of it that were suffering a little bit as well, just through their time in conflict from both Afghan and Iraq, and such things as Bosnia and Sierra Leone that we've mentioned. And we're like, we must be able to do something to kind of support this. And I was in the fire service. Des was in the Middle East and West Africa doing anti-piracy stuff. And he wanted to get back because his daughter was about to be born. So it was a good alignment of times and whatnot. And so he came back and we sat down at the kitchen table in my house and we said, well, what do we actually want to do with business? Like, if we're going to set something up, even on a small scale, even one guy in a van, what do we actually want to achieve? Because we knew how to do pest control because I had a little side business.
Right, yeah. So you were working in the industry.
Yeah. Some firefighters have second jobs, right?
I've never heard of this.
No, it's an anomaly. And that's what I was doing. So we knew how to kind of generate income. So we knew that there was a model there. So we'd created the brochure, we'd got a van out to work, and we knew there was an income stream there.
So you could just keep doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that was no issue for us. It was seamless. But we said, like, that's fine, but what do we want to achieve? And then we said, we want to do four things. We wanted to employ our veterans and reservists, spouses and partners. We wanted to educate and assist children in conflict. We wanted to protect our clients and we wanted to support our injured service personnel. And that was the crux of it. So from that, everything else kind of unfolded from there.
Right. So let's unpack that then. So you wanted to employ veterans and their partners and spouses, etc. So why would you want to do that? Why should you be a veteran business?
Well, I suppose for us, and so this is at the infancy and we've kind of developed our way of thinking by aligning with people, you know, for over the last kind of 4 years. But initially it was about bringing the right team together. So there was no woe-me attitude. There was no kind of sympathy vote, as well as there was no kind of hero worship.
Oh, there was no like jobs for the boys. This is a nice thing to do.
No, it was a business decision. And we said, who could do this job the best? Who do we know we could do this? Because we're good at it. We knew other really squaddies that were good at it around the country, because the what you need to do that job, you know, really good customer service, empathy, the ability to problem solve, to be given clear kind of instruction and then get on with it, either working by yourself or working as a team, you know, as the bigger picture. So we knew that that's the kind of individuals we needed. So from the services, from, you know, all those services, that's where we wanted to select them from. And we knew, again, it made business sense for us to do that. And so that's what we've done. You know, going forward and going beyond that and getting into a deeper kind of meaning around why it makes sense and the benefits of having a team for us, like a fully veteran team, but then again, to provide employment individually, if you're a bigger organisation or even if you're a small organisation, these other things like interdependency, which I'm sure we'll touch on later on, where where we're all pulling together to create and make an objective. These are the things, like, especially over the last kind of 15 years of trauma and conflict, where people come out of it with a different point of view and are much more well-rounded, and we've grown and developed because of trauma and conflict.
Trust must be a big part of it.
Well, I think values at its core, and bringing people in that have those values, and trust is a big thing. And I'm not saying that every service leaver is right for you in your employment. Mm. They're not right for us in our employment. We have a select group that come in and get the job done. But it's easy to recruit as well for us, because people know who we are. They know who they're joining, so that when they come in, they know they're going to be supported. They know they're going to be in supported employment. They're going to be supported by their teammates, because we've always had that. So employment for us was, again, bringing that right people in, making it business sense. But off the back of that, we wanted to advocate meaningful employment as well.
Yeah. But it's the quality of your individual as well, which builds your brand. And, like, the trust of, you know, if you look at the military, you know, why are the Royal Marines the greatest part of our armed services, in my opinion? But it's because of the quality of the individual, and it's that, and that builds the brand. Like, my time in the Corps, I'm just the custodian of that brand. So you know you're sending someone into a house that is, you know, they're the point man of your of your business.
There's another thing as well that gets overlooked quite often. It's, I don't have to do that much vetting, because
it's been done for you.
It's been done from 16, 18, 22 years old. When that person walks through the careers office, they do the vetting and they plough £100,000 into training. You know, so, like, there's a lot of the stuff I don't need to train. And reservists as well, and ongoing with reservists. You know, we've got a guy in Cyprus at the moment who's gone out there and done his stuff. And we know when he comes back, we'll benefit from it.
Yeah.
Because of the skills and attributes that they'll attain from being away and then coming back into the kind of employment environment. And when we were small, like, we're still small, but when we were like two in a van or three and then four.
How many are you now?
Nine, soon to be 10.
Cool.
And then, but getting out to those larger organisations and speaking at events or speaking to people and just gaining traction and doing it really for no other reason than to advocate employment opportunities, because, you know, some of our mates had had issues, like memory trauma problems, for example, and we wanted to make people aware that that shouldn't stop someone employing, but an understanding of situations, an understanding of someone's issues was really, really important. But by and large, the employment piece, it's always been, you're going to get, if you recruit correctly and if they fit criteria, you're going to get someone great with the veteran, with the reservist. And then we look at the spouse, partner.
Yeah, I mean, narrative. An all too overlooked sort of, I mean, it's, for anyone that knows me, knows my missus is the better half of this relationship.
Yeah. Which is quite often.
Yeah, it is. Because I always think it's partly because they've not gone through any training or anything like we did, but actually somehow they've developed a robustness, they've developed an ability to sort of project manage their life to the lives of children, etc., with your absence.
Yeah,
and it's all learned the hard way.
And what they've also done in many cases, especially when you look at my friend's Helleth's company, Recruit for Spouses. So you look at that, and a lot of the people within our kind of cohort in our group that she tries and gets employment for and advocates that are highly skilled. They've had careers up to the point where they got married and then they've moved away. So there's that, there's a huge skill base. So there's a huge benefit to any organisation, especially if you can make that work with things like remote working now. You know, we're moving on, the technology's there to allow that. And one of our team is a military spouse, but she's highly capable. She's much better. If I'd have gone geographic and said, oh, I need someone near me, or I need someone near Des, to work, you know, we need someone next to us. There's no way I got the standard of what we've got. No way. And the three people we got down to final interview were, I mean, it was almost comical. They were all better than me.
Yeah, of course they were. I'm not like, surprised by that.
Yeah, yeah. So they're all better than me. They've all got their CVs were unreal. They could back it up with their interview, and it was so difficult to choose from the three. And you know, we chose the right person, but my point being is that there's this pool of talent that gets overlooked quite often, and it doesn't get utilised. And that was really important because again, it just makes business sense.
Yeah.
Like it makes business sense. Yeah. And I would always suggest you go through someone like that or the families, federations, because you never know what you're going to get. And if you can work remotely, if you need like a virtual assistant or an exec assistant, or if you need someone with PR or whatever, really, you know, I'm just doing that off my own experiences. You're probably going to find someone there with a wealth of ability and skills that you wouldn't get in the veteran community. No way.
Yeah.
Like not with the PR and the...
Yeah, of course.
You're going to get a different level there.
Yeah. So I suppose it's two sometimes very different talent pools.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And we see really good results with it. Like, you know, we won the Armed Forces Covenant kind of Employee Recognition Scheme Gold Award. So we were the youngest and smallest company to have won it. We won that a couple of years ago. And so we have a lot of interaction with larger organisations, mainly larger organisations, and how it's working for them at a top level with really good salaries, with really good prospects, as well as the smaller organisations that have almost kind of followed maybe our example, but certainly we was like almost the gate opener for a lot of people and for people to open their eyes around the impact small business can have with the community. And that as well, like, we are developing industry, GDP, whatever it is, because of our community coming into the workforce. And it's a privilege for me to be sometimes a spokesperson for that wherever I go.
So listen, so if I had pests in my house, right, and I went on the internet and I found, you know, I found a number of companies. One of the things that would draw me to your company, first of all, is what we just discussed. It's the veteran-owned thing. I've got an understanding of that. One of the things that would definitely set you apart, and it's your next value, is that educating children thing. It totally sets you apart. Mm. But at the same time, you know, what is that all about?
So both myself and Des, we've been to Iraq. And then with him especially, he's been all around the world in some of the most undesirable places doing close protection and anti-piracy. So he's seen and understands, as well as a lot of our guys, that some of the most, or the most vulnerable people on the planet are children in conflict. And that was the initial catalyst. So how or why should a small pest control business from West London...
That is exactly my point.
Yeah.
Like, what's that all about?
Yeah. Why and how should they do that? And we were like, we're going to do it. We'll figure it out. But that's going to happen because it's really, really important that we impact people and raise people together. And it's not all about just what can we get? What profit can we make? Of course, that's important. Of course, that's important. But like you say, if we see business for a force for good, especially small veteran-owned business, and I say that because I like to like niche down in things, and if we look at our friends and your little small business with you being the asset and our friends, other small businesses and people within the community, like the opportunities there for, you know, limited companies, for sole traders, for community interest companies and organisations to really, really make an impact in places like Afghan or Iraq or Africa.
Places that are close to your heart because you've lived those experiences.
Yeah. But with people that I will probably never ever meet and people that will never know me and they'll never know where a few dollars have come from to provide them with education. And you've got to get real and it may not lift them. It may lift their kids or their grandkids, but it has to start somewhere. And habitual giving habitual positive impact on a global level is doable for a small business, and it's cheap to do, and it's easy, and it's rewarding, and it's extremely fulfilling, and you can talk about it to your clients. You can encourage your providers, excuse me, and your clients to get involved as well. Mm-hmm. But I think at the crux of it, you've got to believe what you're doing.
Yeah.
And we believe that. And we don't do a charity a week or a charity a month. We're not flippant with what we do. Like, that's just us. Mm-hmm. And we, again, like, we habitually do it. Like, get into a habit, this positive habit of giving.
And obviously a big part of it is that you're a parent yourself.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and I think so media's got a positive role to play in this. Bear with me. So, like, my little ones at home, they don't need to worry about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas I remember watching the news, and there was an image in Syria of a little three-year-old covered in dust in the back of an ambulance, blood coming down his head.
Unimaginable, isn't it?
I was just like, fucking hell. Like, you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and where you know, worried about what school they're going to go to, and what hummus they're going to be eating from Waitrose and all this stuff. Yeah. And we're looking at kids that were just born in the wrong place.
Totally. Totally.
That's all that defines their situation, was just they were born in the wrong location. And we, you know, you look at winning the lottery of life and looking at the UK and looking at, you know, again, our children, and I mean, it's unimaginable to think that they're in that situation, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a driver for us. It's not motivation, because motivation comes and goes. Like, you can be motivated to go to the gym.
Yeah.
Like, that can come and go, whereas a driver, like, the drive to do something.
Totally. It's that sort of, you know, the harder we work, the more difference and impact we can make. And the impact can be really simple. I remember in Afghan, the family living in the compound next to us, they had this sort of, she's probably a five-year-old girl. And so, as a result, in her entire life, she'd only experienced war.
Mm.
And, like, one day she came up and she asked for shampoo. Like, that was the thing. Shampoo. And, like, we gave her, like, a bottle of, like, Lynx hair gel, or, you know, like, you know, shower gel. And anyway, a couple of days later, we're patrolling again, and this kid we've never seen before comes out. And we're like, oh, they've got another kid in this family. I've never seen her before. And it wasn't. It was that she was now clean.
Mm.
And, like, just looked like an entirely different person. And she came up absolutely beaming with a smile. Mm. And all we'd done was give her, like, a bottle of Lynx that none of us were using.
Yeah.
Like, what's the long-term effect of that? I don't know. But actually, you know, if you continue to have that as your drive, as your motivation, that you can be making differences like that consistently,
yeah,
then you can go a long way.
Well, you look at, so regardless of what you think about UN, but their global goals are pretty sound. And one of those global goals, I think it's like 4 or 6 or something, is quality education. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean maths, biology, chemistry. That can mean growing crops.
Mm-hmm.
That can mean sex education. You know, these basic needs. That can mean how to build or how to farm the land. You know, like, and being able to provide that, again, it costs nothing. Like, it astounds me how many small businesses and how many businesses across the world do not look at some form of impact away from anything to do with their main business, because it's so easy to do. And so we went through an organization called B1G1, and I'm happily endorsed them. They are based in Singapore, highly high policy, you know, like, really scrutinized. The Singapore government really scrutinized charities, and they provide something that, I don't know, they provide an easy outlet to get maximum output on the other end. And, yeah, and so I would suggest any small company that wants to do something, for as little as a penny to hundreds of pounds, get on board with that.
But actually, as well, you've got to make sure that your shop's in order as well.
Oh, yeah.
Then you can't, you know, you can't make that difference, you can't make that impact if you go out of business tomorrow.
That's it. I mean, so we wrote down our ethos at the same time as our vision. And the ethos is quite simple and it makes sense. And some people don't get it in this order, but you've got to look after yourself first. So I've got to look after myself. A technician on the ground has to look after themselves. You know, our exec assistant has to look after herself and everything. So you've got to, you know, education, you've got to spend time with your family. Exercise, you've got to spend time with your family. You've got to be emotionally sound, physically sound. You know, you've got to get that balance right. And we hopefully try and support that as well. Mm-hmm. And the next thing on the line is you've got to get, then you can look after your business and our clients. We can look after that then. If you look after yourself, you can then in turn look after your business and the clients. Then we can look after the wider local community, the wider military community and the local community. That's next on the list. If you take any of those out before that, this third thing doesn't work. And then the last thing is we can start looking at the greater good, you know, these global impacts. You know, we can start tackling meaningful problems around the world, which we do as a small business. Yeah, there is no excuse, but we have to get it in that order.
Yeah. But, last on this, I suppose, is that part of that is that sense of service. And I'm presuming that's what you joined the military for, in some sense, is what many of the people that you employ joined the military for, that sense of service. It's the greater good, as you said.
Purpose and meaning is a big deal. And as well as goal setting, and goal setting is part of the bigger picture, but, you know, purpose and meaning, regardless of what it is, for us it was serving, and that's why a lot of our lads, you see, they go from the military to close protection, they go from military to the fire service, go from military to the police, go from military to the prison service, because it's that next, an obvious step to serve and to protect people.
Yeah. Well, so that leads us on nicely, I suppose, to your third vision, which is protecting your client.
Mm. Exactly. And then, you know, that last paragraph there kind of sums it up. Our guys have always done that. They've never not. So we talk about the top, employment, and then we look at protecting our clients. We've got the right team to do that. And we look at social housing. And social housing has a bit of a bad reputation, but it's an amazing, amazing thing. Like, it's amazing. And quite often, we find some of the most vulnerable people that we deal with in social housing, but they're safe and secure and they have people that are working in that industry that genuinely care about what's happening to them.
Yeah.
So when we get involved and our guys have empathy, they understand that a situation might be poor, but how do we get out of that situation? And that might be initially sorting a mouse problem out. But quite often or not, especially when the vulnerability is high and the situation's bad, we are looking at social problems, which we do better than probably any other pest control company out there. Mm. We understand and appreciate poor mental health as well as good mental health, but poor mental health and what that can do. We've dealt with a lot of people who have had PTSD because of childhoods, and what that then leads into is an inability to look after yourself as an adult. So they're coming from a chaotic childhood where they didn't get looked after. And then they didn't have the military where a lot of guys go. You know, they go from chaotic childhoods into the military and then they get sorted out.
Yeah.
Whereas they never had that sorting out piece. So now they don't know how to look after themselves and they fall into kind of, in some cases, kind of misery. And they don't know how to look after their room they may be in if they're in kind of shared accommodation, or they don't have to look after themselves. And we've had cases where we've gone in and there's been fleas jumping everywhere. Like horrendous. Like, you know, you would not, how could you live in this? It's horrendous. But our guys have seen tablets lying all over the floor. So we've then gone back to their key worker and explained, look, this is the situation. There's fleas everywhere, but this is a bigger issue. There's a social issue here.
Yeah.
And there's a physical issue. There's a medical issue. And that and we believe someone should go in, speak to this person, and look at their, how they're taking their medication. Like, we're not a social worker.
No, no.
But our guys are experienced enough.
Nor should you replicate that, because somebody else can do it better. Like, I think when I, you know, when we were talking about this before, I kind of keep thinking about, we all look for mission. That's what we had in the military. Mm. What's the mission? And actually, in many ways, the mission isn't to free this house of pests. It's just one of the many objectives within that mission. And you're just one of the assets. Yeah. And it's up to you to work with all the other assets, just like we did. You know, whether you were the engineer on the ground, I was the infantry on the ground, we had the air support, with this overall mission of basically improving the lives of the people of Afghanistan. Mm. And it took all these things working together. You're just one asset working on one objective. But if you just solely focus on that, then how, you know, then you could be missing something to help somebody else.
So if you look at, if you look at the three forms of human development, so we've got dependency, we have independency, and then we have interdependency. So there's three forms of human development. And if you look at a child, a toddler, they're very dependent on their parents for pretty much all their needs. And then as they get older, they become independent. And that's great for a parent to look at their child and be like, you can now go into the world as an independent person. You know, you're going to cross the road. You're going to be able to go feed yourself. You're going to be able to clothe yourself. You're going to go get your house. You're going to be able to educate yourself. I've given you values that will set you up. You're independent now. And then the when it becomes kind of like enlightened almost, right, is when you then say, well, what's my role within this whole objective? That can be within a small team, it can be in society, and that then becomes interdependent. And I often refer back to it as like, say if you was a patrol in Iraq or Afghan or wherever, and you go out, not one person within that patrol is dependent on someone else. Now, some people can fall into dependency, of course, but no one's dependent because it wouldn't work. You often...
It'd be dangerous.
Yeah, it would be very dangerous, yeah. And there would be so many... flaws along the way. But as like a proper patrol, not like you're escorting a journalist or whatever, but you're a patrol, like no one is dependent. Then, but everyone in the patrol is independent. So they all have their job to do, whether it's the medic, the guy carrying more ammunition, the person who's decision-making, comp, whatever it is. Everyone's independent enough to be able to do their own job. And sometimes you have a secondary job. And a, so everyone's there. But the one thing that brings you all together is the main objective, and there and everyone's understanding that no one is more important than anyone else. Like everyone has got their role to play to get to that point, whatever it is. And that's what it's also like in business. That's for us. That's what it's like working with our clients. So we kind of simplified that, or we looked at 6 points to interdependency. What did we need as a company and to share with our clients to make that happen? So we said we need a system. So we need a system in place where we say, this is what's going to happen. A tick list of events, and let's say it's a mouse job. So we're going to take, it's going to three visits. It's got this amount of time, and we're going to need this. So there's the system. Then we need an education piece. So whether it's sending an email out to say, this is what time we're coming, and this is what needs to be done before we get there, or this is what we've done while we're there. This is what's out. This is the mapping of the area. This is where everything is. This is the outcome or the potential outcome. This is our observations. So there's the education. So S is system, E education, and then we're looking at accountability. I think it's the value that gets overlooked the most. But being accountable for your own actions and understanding of what you need to do. So whether that's this is the time. So this is the system. This is the education. We're going to do this at this time. Accountability is you've got to be there at that time. We've got to be there at that time. And if anything changes, there's a system to deal with how we then facilitate that if someone's late or whatever, right? Yeah. And then we look at risk, so mitigating risk, risk of confusion with all the other things that we've talked about, physical risk on the ground, and you know, risk is all the, you know, the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. Then we look at control measures and implementing correct control measures, whether that's the correct insecticide, rodenticide, the correct equipment, the correct individual, the correct van parked in the right area. We look at that control measure, and then we finally look at help. So if everything's worked out, we may never need help. But if we do, we know where to contact it, whether that's a website, whether that's a piece of information elsewhere, whether that's a podcast, whether that's a phone number to call, an email to contact. So that's, for us, how we create interdependency with our clients. It's really important, because any of the other things won't work.
And this is SEARCH. This is a good military acronym.
It's a SEARCH.
It actually works. It's actually got the proper letters in it. You didn't have to force it in and use like the third letter of the second word.
Yes. Yeah.
To make it
the
like...
SEARCH methodology is our unique way of working with our clients. Yeah.
And I suppose Jingzhou SEARCH is a big part of being a Royal Engineer.
Well, these things are made up, mate.
Oh, wow. Jingzhou, it's like you actually thought about this.
Yeah, I know.
And so then the final bit is, in many ways, kind of what brings me here, I suppose, is supporting the injured.
Yeah.
And actually, it's really interesting because I'm not here because you're supporting me. And I guess that's kind of what you've learned along the way.
Yeah. And then initially, it goes full circle, doesn't it, from when we, or how we started. And yeah, And we did. All the intentions in the world 4 years ago was to support people, and because we looked at people who was suffering, and we were like, "How can we fix that problem with business, not with charity, not with a handout, but how we could do it with business?" And again, was it advocacy, which we do and did, and it cost nothing to do that. You know, it was just getting into the right network, speaking to the right people, having the right intentions. Being able to articulate that across and tell people, you know, our injured are there to be employed and we will thrive collectively. Raising funds for organisations like Combat Stress or small projects like the Poppy Practice, and where that's running ultra marathons, or Des recently dyed his hair, right? Raised like 1,200 quid or something.
Brilliant.
And this makes a big impact, and which is fine, right? So this is all good stuff.
Mm.
It's all good. And now we've gone into employment. So we've got guys who have got complex PTSD that work with us, who again, are much better than me. Like, much better.
Yeah.
But we have created a safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do need, or if an individual does need something, or needs a little break, or they need to be occupied, or whatever it is, we can facilitate that. So there's an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That we're in it together.
But it allows that person to be the great, skilled individual that they should be.
Yeah. And
an asset to you.
An asset to us. And Des is really big. I know it kind of...
He is quite tall, yeah.
Yeah. He's really tall, yeah. He's really big on improving people. So if you come into the company, he wants... you to stay or get better and then leave. That was really powerful for me. I always take a lot from that. And we've recently had someone that we had to get into therapy, and almost any other small company I know would have got rid.
Mm.
And we were like, nah, let's ask the question, are you all right? And anyway, days later, he was in therapy and it was all paid for and everything, and which was the right thing for us to do. And it's easily attainable to do that. To ask that question, is everything all right, instead of flying off the handle or thinking you know what's going on, is everything all right? How can I support you? How can I help you with that? Is very, very, very powerful. And in the days now where we're opening up about, you know, good mental health, management of good mental health, understanding poor mental health better, that's a really, really powerful thing. And then having the ability to then shut up and listen to what the other person has got to say, and then perform an action off the back of that. And so then we're back into the employment side of things.
On that one. So do you think you're employing some of the guys you employ because of the mental health issue that they live with and have overcome at points, or the physical injury that they might have? or indeed just the very traumatic incident they've lived through, and the combat they've seen, etc., do you think you could you can argue that actually they're better for it?
Better, yeah. Like, that's just... This is hard for me to even comprehend that people don't understand that, but because we live it all the time, that's 100% what happens.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing. Like, I'm the same as you, because I'm surrounded by it. I'm surrounded by these awesome blokes, and everyone, and there's still people that I meet that are like, oh, I don't know how to handle that. Like, what a tough time he's had. And you're like, what are you talking about? He's bloody Paralympian.
Yeah.
Yes, mate, it was terrible at the time, but like, look what he's achieved.
It's a privilege. When I was in the room the other night, and there was 70 people or whatever was in that room, and you're chatting to guys, and a lot of girls were there as well, and we're chatting. And I almost feel inferior because people are doing so much good stuff who have gone through a lot of trauma, and they are coming out so much better for it. And so I 100% agree with that kind of sentiment. Like, and that's factual. That's not... We're not a charity. We are a business, and this is the beauty of having business against charity, that you can make business decisions, not charitable decisions. And this is certainly one. Much, much better. Like, they're better than me. Again, like, they are better than me, 100%. And I do a role in that business that maybe they couldn't do, but it's because they're an individual with skill set and certain attributes that they don't have what I have. But overall, like, much better. Much, much, much better. And which then, I suppose, leads me to where I think I initially got that wrong. Well, maybe right at the time.
Yes.
But wrong now. So the narrative that is supporting our injured service person now in the company is definitely going to change, will change in the literature that we write and the content we put out, because now we're finding that our injured are supporting everybody else, whether that's within the community, that is the military, or society in general.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not right to look back and go, we got it wrong, actually, because you probably were right at the time. 4 or 5 years ago, I required support. And actually, it's that support which in turn allowed me to come out the other end of the system. And then, first of all, I suppose, begin supporting the system, feeding back into it. But actually, even to move beyond that, and then to, you know, be given, you know, to develop the platform that's allowed me to have an impact far beyond the military community and into society. And, you know, that's the same when we talk about blokes like YZ and Henson and Nate Jones or whoever it is, you know, because they're really credible in their fields, first of all. Like, they've become expert individuals in their fields and they've got this platform. But that, again, it didn't happen by mistake. It happened because of the support they were given and then the hard graft that they put in.
And also solving meaningful problems with purpose and meaning. And, you know, we go away from the supporting to those that are injured supporting, right? And then the podcast came off the back of that. Or we learned so much because of the podcast. So we wanted to be able to impact as many people as possible exponentially, like, on mass, on scale, without us doing that much. Although it is, you know, there is a process of creating an episode of a podcast that's time consuming and financially, there's a financial pressure and everything else. But we wanted to be able to get to a wide audience again and again and again. And in 50, 60, 70 years, that same conversation is still going to have the same impact on one person. And if it's more, then great. And if we have a collective of work, then brilliant. And that's where the podcast came in. And that's where our biggest success has been. Not financially, not with business, but with achieving 25% of our vision, greater than we could have possibly ever imagined.
Because that's the thing. The question is, what does combat pest control get out of having the declassified podcast?
Well, nothing. Except our vision is being met. So commercially, if I had a commercial mentor who didn't understand us, they'd be like, put that on hold for 5 years, get your full infrastructure in place, concentrate totally on the business. Which, you know,
what are you wasting your money on?
What are you wasting your money and time on, right? And they'd probably be right now. Right? So, but we just got a feeling that this is the right thing to do, and for us it is. And we have the team that support it. Do you know what I mean? Like we have clients that listen to it and grow and develop because of it. And many have got in touch with us. And there was one case where we went to a prospect, we never even got the job. We started talking about the podcast, and her husband had been raped as a child and now went through the full police, did 30 years in the police, and he'd gone to a child abuse case and was suffering horrendously from a post-trauma injury. Horrendously. And I said, look, you need to start listening to this. Like, there's a few episodes, don't listen to several, but listen to episode 4 with Walter.
Well, you often talk about it as a prescription book.
Mm.
You've now got enough episodes that you can go, if that's your problem, here's a solution, a potential solution. Have a listen to that.
Have a listen. This will almost certainly give you some support and guidance.
And at least the thought that you're not on your own.
Yeah.
Like, and as a result, it's even as abnormal a situation as that there are, because someone else has lived it, it's sort of normal, or normalised at least.
Yeah, it is. And
or at least it happens.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, 100%. I mean, just to go back to your question with the business, is it costs us a lot of money.
Mm.
We don't get...
Not my wages.
No. Exactly. Right. Oh, yeah.
I'm doing this for free.
Yeah, JJ's doing this for free today. Although he did stack my house last night and I bought him a takeaway.
Yeah, you did give me a carrot. Thank you.
And, yeah, it costs us a lot of money. It costs us a lot of time and effort and emotional energy. And we don't get any commercial benefit off the back. But it's not about that. For us, it was about aligning with, I suppose, vision partners. Like, do you believe what I believe? Do we align values? JJ, yeah. Then let's do something
totally
together.
Like, I say it to a lot of people. I've met you 3 times. You're my best friend. It's just like, but partly it's because I've listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
So like I'm able to, I feel like I know you better as a result, but it's far more about the vision, the beliefs, and then I look at combat pest control and, I just see all the benefit of it. Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things is that surely it's the lived experiences that you had through combat pest control, the people that you met as a result of it, the community that you created, that is effectively what is being, is what you're putting on Declassified. Mm.
Well, I sat down with Brian Wood like ages ago, 2.5 years ago, and we'd been put in touch with each other by someone on LinkedIn, and because he was doing stuff with the office group, which was obviously buildings, we provided pest control, so I was like, let's just go and have a cup of coffee. Like I was doing 10 times a week and just creating a network. We sat down and he said, oh, do you know my story? And I was like, no, I don't know your story. And this is long before, he really
became a movie star.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Go around on yachts, speaking to hundreds. And I came away and I was like, there's something in this. We should have a place where we can document these stories because I don't want them to be lost. They're so amazing. And they provide so much value by listening to it.
Yeah.
And that's then when I went, and the only person I knew, or the best person I knew in that area, was James O'Brien at LBC.
It's good bloke to know.
Yeah. It's an influential person to know in that.
Very knowledgeable as well.
Exactly. So he got us on. We talked about combat for a bit, and then afterwards we sat down with him and Beth, his then producer. Kind of, she's worked with us from the very start, and we said, like, this is what I want to achieve. And where do we go from there? Beth agreed to kind of sort out the first couple of episodes. And I think it was going to just be like, yeah, it'll be all right, but it'll die. It's, die off after a couple. And he explained how he does his interviews. There's a thread and you have to kind of run through the thread and where you're
going
to go.
Keep going, I don't know this stuff.
Yeah. I'll just give you a copy of the book. It's in there. And then, yeah, then you run through the third. And then for me, it was about like, what do we want to get from each episode? Do we create a body of work that again, like we can use a prescription pad or someone can use? And is there a kid in a bedroom getting bullied that I'll be able to use it? Is there a 90-year-old Dunkirk veteran that will listen and be able to get some value from it? So that's where we was for that first 10, especially. And then it just went, from there to there. And it was like, actually, this is all right. We're getting better at doing it. I lent on Beth and she gave me a lot of input in there, especially them first couple where, you know, where this is where we should be going. This is maybe how we should be doing something. And, which again, you know, she was the expert. Mm. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I knew that it had to be part of my vision. Yeah. Like the company's vision, does it fulfill that? And then the podcast has developed.
But it was born out of meetings that weren't, because I'm going to go set up a podcast. Yeah. It was born through meetings that were, I run a pest control company, how can we help? And
yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I never really thought about it like that. But yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't self-indulgent. It was like, how can we support our vision? Like, let's go get some more work. There's a military guy there. Listen to his story and go, oh no, like this is really good. And then I like speak to my mates. And so originally it was going to be called the Squadron Bar, and it was going to be two, yeah, like this, but in a bar with rubbish audio and just chatting. And then you're like, no, there's much more meaning that we could get from this. And society can take a lot from these conversations. Like, we use the community as a vessel to be able to provide support, guidance, help, whatever you want to call it, to everybody else. And that's what it's done. And I think because we've always been sincere, because we've always not backed sponsorship, because we've always kept on our own platform, like we've never interfered with anything. We've never chased anyone that doesn't align with our values, or at least they align with us, and, you know, vice versa. And our agenda has always been open. Mm. And because we have an agenda, like we definitely have an agenda, but it's not hidden.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to make millions from this. Like it's not. It's not for me. It's not to raise my profile. This is all about doing that fourth point of that vision.
Well, listen, because the other way you've been doing it as well is obviously the book, and you don't sell that.
No, I don't sell that. I give that away as well. And the book was really important. I think that goes back to like
War and Pest. That's
War it. And Pest. Yeah, from Basra.
I've obviously read it cover to cover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have. Don't say that as a joke. Like, you have read that.
No. Yeah. I haven't had. Once I get mice in my house, I will.
There's a lot of information in that. There's obviously stuff to protect our clients in that, and we feel that book's out there. We've also got the website warandpest.com, which is all about giving information away for free to protect our clients, to allow people to thrive in a pest-free environment.
Some businesses, sure, that's completely counterintuitive.
I know.
Wouldn't you want to actually go around throwing mice out your car so that there's more infestation out there?
Yeah, I think, you know what, it comes back to trust and values. Because growing up within social housing, in a low-income family, there's no way my mum would have been able to afford combat pest control to come in and do their job. Yeah. She just wouldn't have done it. She'd have taken a DIY approach. So then our kind of thought process around that was, then how could I help my mum 25 years ago by writing the back end of this book? And then how can
be the person you needed when you were a kid?
Yeah. I love that. That's great. That little sentence. It's such a good thing. And we tried doing that in the back end and not holding information back. It was important, and then that first part of it was hopefully another veteran-owned business will pick that up and go, oh no, like I kind of need to articulate a vision and a values. And then the middle section was about our like leadership and understanding that we need to, you know, like the All Blacks, they leave their jersey in a better position when they leave and they
get. That's what I said about the Corps at the beginning. Yeah, like, you know, that was my time in the Corps was. There's 350 years worth of heritage in this. Like, it is, and I don't need to write off its coattails. I need to add to that.
Yeah.
You know, and I still do. You know, we all still do, because we're all still contributing to our, you know, our community.
Yeah. And representing as well.
Yeah.
Like, you when you leave, I think it was actually Woody that mentioned this when someone said, oh, you're an ex soldier, an ex-Royal Marine. He's like, no, you're a former Royal Marine.
Former. Always.
And
I'm not dead.
Yeah, exactly. And you are representing. You represent everything that we stood for then and stand for now. And I think things like business like this, you know, Team Rubicon is a prime example. Endeavour Fund is an amazing example. What we do away from this, what I do with, or what Wisey does with Dave Henson, or with what Richard Mens does, advocating assistance dog, whatever it is there. And yeah, I mean, like, I thought you mentioned Cy Harmer, just so much for so many people, almost just too much for too many people. And but it, the way he goes back and teaches first aid and trauma, first aid and all these kind of things for other companies. So all of the stuff he learned in service is now being used again, and it's not getting lost. He's really big on that. Like, he has this wealth of information that he can't go out and physically implement now, but what he can do is he can pass that on, and he's still saving lives that way.
Yeah.
And I just love that kind of the purity of that. Yeah. And but all these people that I've come into contact with have been off the back of just starting something, not knowing how to do it, but wanting to achieve a vision within a vision, I suppose. Yeah. And, you know, creating role models, declassifying stigmas, changing the conversation has been, you know, it's been, yeah, it's probably the most amazing thing that we've ever done, because we know we're doing it.
So, but all right, before we move on to, you know, what next? When you sat down at that table those years ago and said, we're going to start a pest control company, and as you said, a big part of that was establishing your vision and your values.
Yeah.
Did you picture this? No chance, surely.
Oh, no chance. No chance. And, you know, we've got things coming up that I can't talk about that are massive. But they're not massive to the business, right? There is some good stuff coming up with the business. There's some really good opportunity. But there's things that our vision will be taken on steroids.
But none of it would have happened if you didn't set up a pest control company.
No, none of it. The rat, it starts with a rat and a mouse.
Yeah.
Everything. When we get people like Helen's podcast out, you know, equivalent 2-star general, civil servant, talking about what she talked about. You've got to remember, it starts with a rat, right? Physically starts with a bed bug and a lad in a van sorting it out. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
And that's where veteran-owned business, like, people go, yeah, but you turn up on time and you've got a haircut and you're clean shaven. Well, I don't turn up on time
and
all the time.
And you're not clean shaven.
I'm not clean shaven. And sometimes I have bad hair, right? Because I'm busy, I've got kids, and I live in London, and you can't jump in a cab and be like, I'm going to be there in 5 minutes flat. No, because sometimes you are late.
Yeah.
But
at least there's a reason for it.
Yeah, there's a reason for it. But what I mean is, like, there's so much more within this.
Yeah.
Don't go to a veteran business because there's sympathy. Go to a veteran business because they're operationally excellent. They're open-minded to change. Like, they have accountability and self-discipline, and they honour humility. You know, they pursue excellence. All these things. Like, go to one for that.
Yeah.
Go to them because what people around them have achieved, like the group of individuals that they may know, or the experiences that they've gained, because their experiences, especially this Iraq-Afghan generation, because that's my generation.
Yeah.
Right. That generation is going to change a lot for a lot of people.
Yeah. So, in the book, you call this the growth generation. You call us. I'm part of it. Tingles up my spine. The growth generation. So what's coming for us then?
So the growth generation came out the back of speaking at an event like 3 years ago about employment. And I listened to Walter Buzatil on stage talk about post-traumatic growth, a thing that happens and you develop because of the trauma and conflict that you've experienced. And it doesn't have to be military conflict or trauma. It don't have to be military trauma. But there is a thing in the brain that happens where you grow and develop, post-traumatic growth. And it fascinated me. Like, I was fascinated by it. I wanted to understand why people get better because of the traumas they're facing. It's obvious, isn't it? You know, like, you get a cut, it grows, it heals over, and your immune system gets a little bit better.
It learns, yeah.
It figures stuff out. You get a cold, you never get that cold again. And I'm not medical, but I think that's
yeah.
So roughly speaking, that's right. You
yes.
know, your immune system develops yeah, because
absolutely,
of it.
Absolutely.
And then I see it.
You burn your hand, you don't touch the stove again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you learn from your lesson. All these things, the negative into a positive. And then I was looking at, like, YZ. Then I was looking at Terry and Woody, and in some respects, my own experiences, and certainly Sean Jones and Dez, and you and Si and everyone else that we've come into contact with. And you're like, well, how are they growing and developing, and what characteristics are they expressing that will have an impact on society? And then we look at the Greatest Generation, where during that First World War started and ended, Second World War came, 5 years of fighting, or 4 years, whatever mm-hmm. it was, of fighting. And they came back and rebuilt. They rebuilt, they were occupied, they were extremely busy. They had to fight for their families because the bombs were dropping here. They had a different perspective and outlook that we have today. But there was rebuilding. Mm-hmm. Now I look at Gulf War One or Falklands, Gulf War One, then the Bosnia, Kosovo, and in the book I write about the Afghan-Iraq generation, and again I got that wrong because those that have come before us now mentor and guide us now.
Yeah,
like so there is a bigger picture here to this growth generation. So there's the mentoring that's so important.
Well, you look at Desi, actually, as you're saying, his experience is actually the Sierra Leone thing.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't Desi, it was another chap. But yeah, his Sierra Leone thing. His experiences from Sierra Leone. But you look at Andy, who works at Facebook, and we're working with Facebook, as I'm pointing to you, JJ, we are working with Facebook.
Yeah, there's no cameras here, yeah.
Yeah.
He was pointing
and
at me.
Michael
points across the room at JJ. That's true. For the Victorian period.
But Andy, you know, he's in Northern Ireland, but he's guided, mentored and supported me over the last kind of, certainly the last couple of months. And to the point where, you know, my mum's poorly and he's concerned about me because of my mum, and he's ringing me and all this kind of stuff. So there's more to this. But the growth generation, in its absolute purest sense, the Iraq-Afghan generation, and these, I suppose, six things that I have highlighted, but there'll be more that come into this. So it's not, it's just me making stuff up again.
You're very good at that.
But you look at worldview and the kind of live and let live attitude that people have. As long as no one, you're not impacting someone else's happiness, people are generally like, I'm cool with anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm fairly happy with anyone around me, as long as no one's happiness is being impacted. So there's worldview, and then there's strength. And the strength that I see, especially your kind of contingent of Invictus coming through, like the strength that you didn't maybe knew you had before, and the strength that people are showing when they're still suffering, but they show this strength and they can move on, and they can go way beyond most people's kind of tolerance, both physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. Then we look at ability, and some of society's biggest problems, whether that's knife crime, whether that's a physical disability, the need for prosthetics, all these actual problems, mm-hmm. and the innovation that's coming off the back of that generation of
yes.
people.
Yeah.
And that will still carry on, because we've got guys studying PhDs and in the top of their field now, yeah. medically, scientifically, in industry, in business. Like, innovation is always coming, mm-hmm. and I believe that this generation is at the forefront of that,
yeah,
in certain areas. And acceptance, whether yeah. that's accepting other people, whether that's accepting your injury, whether accepting your situation, and then the ability to do something off the back of that.
Yeah.
Also accepting other people's problems, mm-hmm. or situations, and being able to again go back and have the ability yeah. to deal with something.
Well, and the openness around mental health as well.
mate, like...
like, we've been at the forefront of that. Like, yes. You wouldn't believe. And we should be, because the military should lead the way on certain things. Like, we have the skills and ability to do that.
People who are leaving, the veteran community has led the way with mental, the improvement of mental health, the maintenance of mental health and the highlighting of poor mental health for the last 5 years. And it's only getting better. And now you see direct impact into the MOD, into wider society. And you look at the veteran community going from Prince Harry to me and you sat in this podcast right now. Mm-hmm. And everyone in between, whether that's one conversation with your mate in the pub, whether that's being open to going to do some meditation or posting, you know, like, yeah, I meditate. It's good for me. Boom, post it on Instagram. Like, that ability to accept all different, what's the word? Like, or just to be able to, just to be able to accept my situation and be able to improve it. And you're absolutely right. We're at the forefront of this and now it's impacting society. Because if a big, kind of hairy-assed Royal Marine can talk about his issues and how he's got over these issues or how he's dealing it day to day, then it's open season for anyone to talk about that stuff.
Totally. And Prince.
Yes.
Former soldier Prince can do it.
And what that does then is, again, it's another thing that this generation does, and that's relationships. You look at how they form relationships, their bonds with their friends, their bonds with their children, their siblings, their parents. Now, of course, like, we know people that have detached themselves, mm-hmm. but that is a small number, and we shouldn't detract from the fact
Absolutely.
That happens.
Because even one is enough.
Exactly. But what the message...
Sorry, one is too much.
One is just too much. Yeah. Sorry, yes. One is too much. But understand that that doesn't have to be the end bit.
Yeah.
You don't always have to stay there, because these people I know have been there and are now have got some of the strongest relationships.
And do you know what? More importantly, that not everyone, because it's a very easy headline to make it, they're all suffering. They're all ruined.
Yeah.
And that worries me. As I said, one suicide, one person in a dark place, etc. It is too much. But actually... if we tarnish this entire generation and we look back 20 years from now and look back on it, I think I'll end up being ashamed of my service.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen, because I'm extremely proud of it, because it's the making of me and it's the making of the people around me. And if we get to a point where we begin to be ashamed of it for the wrong reason, because it was a very easy narrative to tell, and actually it's the beauty of what we're doing here, is that we know the truth, right? And now we have this platform to be able to tell it ourselves.
Yeah.
And that to me is the most exciting thing about the Growth Generation and what we're doing in this room right now, is that we've got this amazing group of individuals, but we've also got the platform to give those individuals their voice.
We are.
And they didn't have that. The Greatest Generation didn't have that.
You're right. So those that were proud from their service in World War II and beyond, and what they did for the country after, they had limited abilities to be able to kind of get that out. Whereas now we
are... And as you say, they were too busy building.
Exactly. Now we're in a position where we don't have to rebuild physically, but we can influence wellness. We've got the right technology. We can create the right partnerships. We have the right cohort of individuals that have got this growth and development, that I've got this worldview, this strength, this ability, the acceptance, the ability to create relationships, and that there is the thing for what I want to be and I want us to be known as. A growth generation, nothing else.
Right. Tell you what, as a listener of this program, thank you. Thank you for what you've created. Thank you for giving us a voice. And what is it you say? I think we'll leave it there.